one pass, but
you don't have one pass on you.
Hello, not everyone. Kaylee Holtgren, Group Content Manager with Event Marketer and Chief Marketer, co-producers of Esports Business.
I have it on my
I'm really excited about this session because I write about event marketing, okay. So can't wait to hear about activations. 10 ways to activate esports sponsorship. So we have two panelists and a moderator. Our panelists are Neil Duffy, Vice President, Collegiate Star League, and Jordan Sherman, Head of Revenue Operations and Sponsorships for Genji. Moderator is Johnny Ward, co-founder, CEO, Damage the Esports Agency. Please, round of applause, welcome them.
Okay. Hi, everyone, I'm Johnny. But before we start, before we jump into introductions, I want to officially put down our pet peeves. You've all heard of this, but I have a swear jar here, so we have three things that we're not allowed to do. We all know the first one, don't say the word, starts with an A. Authentic. No more. Just stop saying that word.
Please.
The second one is, if you think or write down esports with a capital S, you got to put some money in the thing, okay? Or if you even think or you write down or you say it, e-gamer or e-gaming, okay? Can we just not ever say that?
Okay.
I'll put it right here.
Thank you.
We're going to check them at the end. Also, Neil and Jordan and I want to get a feel for the room a little bit so that we can tailor the panel more to a specific audience because it's totally different audiences throughout the convention. So what I want to do is just raise your hand if you're on the brand side. Okay, we got a few. Raise your hand if you're on the agency side. Cool. And then raise your hand if you're on the esports property, league, or organization side. Got it. Okay, cool. Sounds like it's pretty heavy on the third one, guys. Let's jump into introductions. Neil?
Sure. My name is Neil Duffy. I'm the Chief Commercial Officer with World Gaming, the Collegiate Star League. What that really means is I drive all revenue, partnership sales, sponsorships. So every day I wake up, live, breathe, eat, sleep. How do I drive revenue to the business? How do I create some pretty cool partnerships that are unique and different from the amateur side, which is where we focus on the World Gaming perspective, and then through the Collegiate Star League, which is obviously a college-based league and tournament operator. How do we provide some really cool stuff back to the students that add value to their experience, and then how do we make sure we deliver great content and great properties back to the brands?
Jordan?
Cool. My name is Jordan Sherman. I work with Genji. Genji, we are a global esports org, which means we have offices in Seoul and Shanghai and LA, where we own and operate professional esports teams. We're also building out unique levels of business operations in the esports space that I'm going to walk you guys through a little bit today. So while we have the professional side, we also have some really unique things that we're doing with content and influencers and actually working with brands on creating new assets for them. And before working at Genji, I worked at Major League Baseball and at the LA Clippers.
Cool. And I'm Johnny Ward. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Damage the Esports Agency. We're a Los Angeles-based agency that helps brands navigate the esports space. And we, in early February, we were named as the global agency of record for Intel Gaming and esports. So, first question. Jordan, in your many conversations with brands, how do you position Genji overall?
So, what I always try to do, like when I work with brands, is just try to keep it really simple. What I would do is try to see, okay, what their level of esports knowledge is first, with the understanding that having zero is okay, and then just kind of trying to build from there. Because I think sometimes when you can go in on a pitch or when you're talking to a brand, it's just super confusing because there's like so many different leagues and partners and the whole thing is new. So I'll try to focus on like one specific thing that kind of makes sense. For some people, it's pro teams. For some people, it's influencers. For some people, it's like they want their own type of line of business that we go into. And then the key is like finding the common ground for what they're doing in like other sports or other marketing or other media, and just having that like so they're kind of looking at it through the same lens. So if they're buying stuff on like a CPM basis or an activation basis or a content basis, like trying to line it up, because I always try to be really sensitive to the fact that like brand marketers are, they have to go to their boss and like ask to be an esports, and they're like putting a little bit on the line for themselves.
Or a lot on the line.
A lot on the line, like their job in some cases, you know, because like they'll get blamed. But I actually think it's going to help them and get promoted and all that if they can like show it to their boss the way that like they're used to buying media, that they could do it the same way in esports.
That's cool. Yeah, it seems to be a recurring theme as well, like having the analytics match up to what they're used to and what they're familiar with. Neil, so in your many conversations with brands, how do you position World Gaming and Collegiate Star League?
So a lot like Jordan, actually, we go in and we talk about, you know, what they do, what they understand, if they're involved in traditional sports, if they're involved in entertainment, and then we walk them through what our value prop is, what our businesses are. So they're very distinct businesses. So World Gaming is a platform where people meet and compete and play in tournaments and leagues, head-to-head matches, with some of the biggest games in the world. So FIFA, Madden, NHL, NBA, Call of Duty, Fortnite. So we do all of these different activations and tournaments around that. So if a brand is looking to engage on an online to live event, geared towards 18 to 34, but there's no limit on that. But that's kind of the bullseye that we hit. Then we'll steer them towards that. Whereas if brands are looking to specifically engage with the 18 to 24 year old, primarily male college student, we'll go in a different manner. We do a lot of online. All of our leagues are online. All of our tournaments are online. We get data around all of the student schools, emails, majors. But then a big component, we've actually built our business in five different ways on the college side. And I'll walk you through it because it'll help kind of frame the rest of the conversation. The first side is our competitive side. So if you want to be a varsity athlete competing for a national championship for your school, you'll play in our varsity Div 1 program. If you want to be more social or casual and more have a connection with the community and just maybe do some LAN events here, play in some tournaments, maybe bounce around between games, you'll play in our Div 2 and Div 3. And those are smaller prize pools, primarily for contesting, giveaways. Or if you want to have an interaction with us, we'll do marketing. So product demos, game demos, engagements on campus. That'll be our marketing vehicle. Fourth, we've built an army of brand ambassadors. So for those of you folks who are from brands or from agencies, when you're looking to engage with this demographic, there's really no better way to do it than through brand ambassadors who also act as influencers. And then our fifth pillar is the live events that we host. So we run a fighting game circuit, which is primarily around Smash Ultimate, Smash Melee, Street Fighter, and then hopefully adding a couple more this year. So we'll do 62 on-campus events in 2019-2020, primarily built around going to the campus, having a small activation. Maybe 100 people show up, maybe 500 people show up. But it's going to be a real event. It's going to be a fun event. It's going to be authentic to that community. And it's going to be something that we can actually put our stamp of approval on from the Collegiate Star League side and say we're not professional by any means. We're not a professional org. We're not a big business, but we're doing it for the students, run by the students, and it's going to have an impact for those folks. So across those five pillars, if there's a touch point in gaming that we're going to talk to on campus, those broad strokes will touch the students in some way.
Nice. Yeah, it sounds like you covered the entire gamut looking for that demographic.
Well, we try to because, and I'll say why I built the business the way that we have, is there's an omnipresent fear of the NCAA. And I'll say this, 4 years ago, we looked around, the NCAA was, you know, sniffing around, looking to get involved. They hired Intersport 2 years ago. So we were under pressure that they might come in and sanction the varsity athletes and the varsity programs, and that would kind of cut us out. So we wanted to make sure that we built our business in a defensible and future-proof way, that no matter what the NCAA chose to do, we would still have a great business that could serve students and, you know, provide an opportunity for people to play games on campus. And at the end of the day, we built that business, and then the NCAA has decided that they're not going to have involvement, at least in the short term.
Cool. And I apologize on behalf of Neil for saying that word. Authentic.
Yeah.
I thought we had a rule here. Jordan, one of your most high-profile partnerships is with Bumble, which is it's a dating platform, which originally was designed for the female to make the first move. Tell us about that deal.
Yeah, so we're going to go to the slides, or?
Yeah.
Cool. So so kind of similar to what I was saying before. So Bumble, it's actually not just dating. Bumble does romance and dating, but they also do networking and friendship. So they knew that they kind of started seeing that people in the app were actually putting in their profile that they like gaming. Like they play Call of Duty, they play Overwatch or League of Legends. So people were kind of hacking the system. So what they wanted to do was find a way to actually enter into esports because they knew that their clientele was using it and liked it. So we knew we had something there, like the base level, and then we wanted to build something for them that made sense. So as a company, what we always tell brands is just build on your strengths. Like whatever your strengths are and whatever else that you do, you can just take those strengths in esports. You don't have to completely change it. So Bumble's strengths are female empowerment. They have a woman-led CEO who's really big in tech. And their user base is gigantic and global. So we had, we were already building this, but it actually matched up really well. We were building a professional, women's professional team, so all women's team for Fortnite. And the first step for them was to make them like the best players possible. So we had to go on this whole recruiting thing to like find the best female players we could find, move them to LA, play, train with our trainers, play with all of our players, become part of our team. And so what we eventually wanted to do was we thought, okay, if our female team can actually make it to the Fortnite World Cup, beat the guys, it can help kind of change the narrative in gaming about where women fit in. Mm-hmm. And then on the next slide of the video.
Yeah, you want to show the video?
Yeah, so
it's good.
Well, so yeah, so in addition to getting the pro gamers, we got them to actually kind of talk about what they do and why they're really good. But we also got like content creators and female influencers too. So that's what you see in here.
Very cool.
In racing, I was always in like a male-dominated sport, so whenever I got into gaming, it was kind of the same thing.
I only started to notice that it was different to be a woman gamer when I was 12, 13, getting into Halo 2 lobbies.
Being a woman in the gaming industry definitely has its challenges, such as not being seen as good enough.
There's a lot of negativity in the gaming world and the internet. But it's best to try to be a role model and change the way people look at women in gaming.
I've learned to, you know, deal with it in more professional ways. And a good thing about the internet is you can block them.
You know, I'm really happy to say that over the last 5.5 years that I've been a streamer on Twitch, I've seen a significant improvement in harassment.
I'm proud to be who I am and to represent what Gen Z is representing. The idea that girls can do it because we can and we will.
So I think it's really cool and uplifting because our strategy wasn't just committing to female gamers. We also had female business leaders, and then next slide you see female content creators, and you kind of see like a little bit edgier. And then the next slide will show like the long-term vision. So basically, when we launched this, we heard two things, which was really cool. The first thing we heard is I feel seen. A lot of like gamers, female and male, saying I feel seen. I appreciate this partnership. Kind of makes sense, so that felt good. And then the second part was we saw everyone was like, well, can I get this jersey? And so our merchandise team spun up the jersey really quickly. And then just on the side, we said, you know, maybe you could put your gamer tag on the back. And 95% of the people who bought the jersey actually put their own name and own gamer tag on the back.
Nice.
So what we thought and what we saw, because like if you buy a Clippers jersey, I don't put Sherman on the back of a Clippers jersey, I'm not on the Clippers. But it was just weird. But what we saw is like people started to feel like a connection to the team, even though the team was announced a month ago and hasn't even like competed yet or hasn't really existed. Right. So like the short-term goal is like help Bumble develop credibility in the market. We did that by matching up like what makes sense to their company. Then they're going to realign the product, so now you can actually put, like, I'm a gamer on your Bumble profile, like, on the front page, so you can connect with people gaming, like, networking, friendship, or dating. And then eventually, down the road, our big plan is to, like, you know, we want to get guys actually on the team and get more interactions so people can meet in real life and hopefully kind of change the narrative a little bit just around, like, don't be mean to people online and, like, men and women can play together and it's all good. Like, we're all kind of connected in this community through gaming.
Cool. So one of the ways to activate a sponsorship is to take their paradigm of that particular sponsor and really tailor a customized approach to them. In this case, female empowerment. There's one more too. They got a ton of press, which is amazing. That's what you really want.
I'm a little disappointed that my LinkedIn post about this didn't make it up here.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
I saw that. I'm a big influencer.
Yeah.
What I was thinking, yeah.
So 200 people won't see it.
200,
right?
That would be lucky if I had 200. What I was saying yesterday in our pre-discussion about this was the best activations that we see in the marketplace are the ones that your peers kind of look at and say, damn, that's a great deal. And I wish I would have thought of that. And it was really cool for me to be able to share that with Jordan was, there's not many deals where I sit back and say, wow, that's really phenomenal. That's really, you know, pushing the envelope. And I'm really disappointed I missed out on that. Not necessarily from a revenue generating perspective, but in awareness, empowerment, and just the cool factor. You know, this, you know, I commend you for that because everybody took notice of this and everybody said, yeah, you know what? Gen G is pretty cool. Gen G made a great move and it's raising the profile. So congratulations to you. And, you know, that deserves a round of applause for getting this deal done.
Neil's a big fanboy of Jordan Sherman.
Well, I
actually own a Clippers jersey with Sherman. you guys will see me repping
that.
The
one thing
sure.
I would say about this, thank you for that. That was really nice. And one thing I say about this for people like marketers or teams in the room, this it took a year to like from inception to launch to get this off the ground. So it's kind of easy to talk about it now, but I say that in a way that like, it should make people feel good and comfortable that like maybe if your company hasn't gotten into esports yet. You can. Eventually, you have to like actually make a move and pull the trigger. But know that there's a lot of thought and time and effort went into this. So I say this as a way like people should feel good about wherever you are in your process.
Very cool. Neil, tell us about your most high-profile brand partnership.
Oh, Concure. That's a tough one to follow. Now, I would say my favorite one that we've done is a Bud Light activation. So with college students, and I'll preface it by saying we did this deal with their Canadian team. The legal drinking age in Canada varies from 18 to 19. So this was a much easier deal to get done. And Bud Light's an aspirational brand for a lot of us that are in esports. When you get, it's kind of one of those stamp of approvals where you get featured in ESPN. That's a cool moment for a lot of us. When you get a brand deal done with like a Nike or a Bud Light or, you know, a HyperX or the Score, you really want to be featured in these high-profile outlets and stuff that you're proud to use. So when Bud Light came to us and said, we want to be involved in college campuses, we sat down, we ideated around, what can we do that's interesting, and what can we do that's not going to be us slapping Bud Light's logo around some gaming tournaments and saying, hey, go to your store and buy Bud Light because drinking a really light beer is cool. That's not something that we wanted to push upon our students because that... Our narrative isn't that we're selling out to brands. Our narrative is that we're providing the best gaming experience for students on campus. So what we landed on was an 8-city campus tour, going to every major city with all the best schools in the country, and creating a gaming tournament that was free for everybody, where the students could come out and participate for a prize pool. And Bud Light happened to underwrite the prize pool. They happened to have offers and prizes and giveaways and swag around their product. But it wasn't in your face in any way. And the way that they were going to drive a positive ROI, when I say ROI, I mean affiliation and association with the brand, was that they just wanted Bud Light to be top of mind for the gaming generation. So when we would do it in Calgary or Vancouver or Ottawa, Toronto, Bud Light would be omnipresent but never in your face. And what we saw as a result was when we spoke to the venues that we used after, some of them were on campus and others were near campus, was you actually saw an uplift in sales that night, which should surprise nobody. But then you saw an uplift in Bud Light sales over the following weeks, which is the way that they knew that their key accounts were seeing a lift as a result of this. And Bud Light then, we were the kind of their pilot program, and they stuck us up in Canada for it. Then they got into some heavier stuff around content. And you guys might remember in 2016, they had a bit of a misstep when they introduced Bud Light All-Stars. They just didn't go into this space.
Do a lot of people know about this example of Bud Light as being, you know, sorry if Bud Light's here, but a poor activation?
Anybody from Bud Light here?
Okay, good. Go ahead.
We love Bud Light. They came into this space and they wanted to treat esports the same way they had done traditional sports. And for any of you guys who have gone to an event that Bud Light sponsors, it's usually pretty epic. They do a really great job around their tentpole programs of sports and music. Mm-hmm. However, what they did, it was at DreamHack Austin, I believe, was they created a two-tier system for the haves and the have-nots. If you're a Bud Light All-Star, you get access to the VIP area, which gives you XYZ perks that the rest of the people didn't get. And that, for many of us who have been in the space for a long time, one of the greatest things that I love is that you can go and interact with anybody that you want, whether it be a superstar, whether it be a streamer, content creator, or anybody who's in the space is pretty accessible. And I can't tell you the last time I went to a basketball game and afterwards got to hang out with LeBron James. So Bud Light came in, they made a misstep, but then they rectified by doing some really cool deals. They've done a deep dive, and actually they're thought leaders right now around some of the stuff that they're doing. And I think you're going to see a lot more from them in 2020 as it becomes a key pillar of their strategy moving forward. But that doesn't mean that you make one error and you can't come back and I guess prove yourself. Because when they came to us, they were very truthful in their knowledge, saying, hey, we messed up. Tell us what we should be doing. Let us know how we can deploy these dollars, and let's just do something really cool. And as a result, we did, and we're looking to renew for them in future years.
Very nice. I actually have an Intel case study as well. So Intel's external messaging is Intel delivers technology for real-world performance. And one of their, they spent over $100 million in 2019, 2020, 2021 with ESL and other entities. One of those other entities is the Overwatch League. So in their deal points with the Overwatch League, they had access to a variety of different players across a variety of different teams. So what they chose to do was create some branded content series. So rather than just putting a product commercial out, which is a little bit boring, a little bit one-dimensional, and more transactional versus strategic, they created long-form documentary-style player profiles that they pulled from different teams that really dug into the deeper into the lives of some of the world's most elite players. And their 2019 campaign right now, Unleash Your Brilliance, is all about the player, not the product. And in this content piece that you'll see, it really puts the player first. This is a 30-second social cutdown that then directs viewers over to Intel Gaming's YouTube channel.
The most memorable moment would probably be beating Shock this season. That was like such a good experience. It made me like really, really happy.
That's right, there's a big shatter! Oh, they did it again!
It's crazy because we were such a big underdog.
The Houston Outlaws defeat the San Francisco Shock.
My old team, I'm good friends with like literally everyone on the team. So I was just happy playing against them, and then winning just made it like the best experience ever.
So obviously Intel, you know, there's a certain budget with that, but this is another example of a way to activate your esports sponsorship is through branded content that preferably doesn't necessarily have the brand labeled all over it. Keep it cool, keep it real. Okay, Neil, how a brand esports sponsorship is activated is important, but equally important is how those activations are tracked in ROI. Define the most important metrics for you.
Well, we use a bunch. Data is king, for sure. What differentiates the top-tier orgs and the top-tier companies and the other ones is how they use that data and how they take it and decipher it and deliver it back to the brand and something that they can actually use. Because for those of us in this room, you guys are all obviously passionate about learning and understanding the world of esports and the business of esports, but for some folks that are probably sprinkling dollars across various different verticals, they don't necessarily have the same in-depth understanding. So the way that we track it is really about four or five different ways. One would be registrations. Two would be on-campus presence, so live events. Three would be the teams that are engaged with it. And then the other ones would be stream and engagement. So social reach and impressions, we use them, but not very much. We want to talk about the engagements. So I can have a post and I can boost it and I can amplify it with influencers, but it's all about how are people engaging with your brand, how are people talking about your brand, and what's the sentiment that is being felt from that. So we use engagements as our primary tool, and at the end of the day, it's not going to be a number that wows everybody and says, wow, we've got to, you know, really cut you a check for that much more money, but it's going to be a true story and it's going to be an honest story. And when we sit down and we talk about these numbers, if you're talking outside of the LCS, LEC, Fortnite World Cup, Overwatch League, a lot of us that are going through the amateur circuit, I'm going to be honest with the crowd here, the numbers are not staggering. There's times where we'll have, you know, 2,000 people participate in our Rocket League tournament, 2,000 teams participate in our Rocket League tournament, pretty cool number, but to a brand, they don't know how to take that information. 2,000 teams, is that a lot? Well, to those of us in the room, yeah, that's probably one of the largest amateur Rocket League tournaments in the world this year, so we're really proud of that number. So it's all about the data and how you deliver it back. And there's been times where, so our company is owned by a larger media and entertainment conglomerate called Cineplex. So they own movie theaters and entertainment complexes. So for us to get numbers is no problem at all. If we wanted to run a program and get 100 million impressions, we can do that. But how do you translate those impressions into a meaningful return for the brand? And that's something that we still work through. And, you know, we've got brands we've worked with in the past, General Mills and Kellogg and Bud Light, to name a few from the non-endemic side. And then we've also worked with publishers and partners, including the NBA and NHL. And all of them right now are looking at it and saying, how do we just get people engaged with our product? How do we get people engaged with our brand? And how do we entrench ourselves and get our hooks in so that what we do today and next year and the year beyond, we've got a meaningful place in the market, and especially from the college side. It's so early, and there's so many cool brands like Find Your Grind, and Frank and I were just speaking about this. We're doing a campus tour right now, an 8-city campus tour with Find Your Grind, where we go campus to campus to campus, and they bring in some of the top musical talent in the world, and we activate the esports component of it. And I just found out a few moments ago that Find Your Grind is running a junior rogue program. So for those of you who don't know Find Your Grind, you should look them up because they're going to make a big play in esports. They already are. And they're all looking about getting that younger audience. How do you create that kind of, I don't want to say cradle to grave, but how do you create that opportunity to engage with a brand from 14 all the way until 34? So you've got multiple touch points, so you're always top of mind for them.
Very cool. Jordan, to find the most important metrics in professional sports, because it's a cool dichotomy here. We have the professional side, obviously, and we have the amateur and collegiate side. So it's fun to hear from your side.
Well, I would say it's actually pretty similar. The NBA has a lot of value in just like the jersey badge, for example, and things that are on the court, and you could point to like a gum about it. Like all the teams use like gum and Nielsen to show the valuations there. But I think a lot of traditional sports teams are thinking about it just the way you outline, like the engagement, the reach, the impressions, creating content with the brands and the players, and like making sure that you're actually delivering like full media value. Like when I was at Major League Baseball, we would actually promise them a full media value, like CPM based, and then all the different content stuff we did was considered added value. Mm-hmm. And we did that as a way to compete for traditional media buys. And that was just a very successful strategy that I think maybe will come to esports at some point too.
But I hope it does, and we had this conversation in our pre-discussion, was if you're an agency or you're a brand and you're looking to evaluate esports on a CPM basis, that's a race to the bottom. And I promise you that. It's just not apples to apples comparisons unless you're going to a content an esports content site that's just driving viewership and you're doing banner ads, you're doing pre-roll. That's one way to evaluate it. But if you're talking to an org, you could put numbers of FaZe against Gen G, but you're talking to two different audiences. And you might both think you're in esports, but you're really not. So that's another thing you got to do a lot of research on, and you can't base this entire industry on CPM because that's a quick way to lose.
I totally agree. And I would say, like, if you're representing a brand or representing an agency, you got to make the decision, okay, am I just going to treat esports like it's a typical media buy? And if that's the case, then, like, you know, Twitch and YouTube and stuff like that, like, that's probably good for you. But that's not what we're selling. I know that's not what you guys are selling. Like, if I always, again, I put myself in the shoes of the person I'm talking to. And I think what we want to do for like brands and for agencies is to say, we're going to actually build something for you that's a franchise. Mm-hmm. And by franchise, you can actually build on top of it in esports for 3 to 5 years. So now, all of a sudden, instead of just doing a buy at an event or doing a buy that's, you know, 30 seconds on digital, where you're there for like a little bit, how do you actually have something that is meaningful and can be long term? Like, Bumble's one example. We have other ones too that I can talk to anytime. But it's like that deal is a 3-year deal, and we have a full calendar of events that we're going to do and build on it. And then after 3 years, they might be like, hey, Gen G, we're going to roll with Team Bumble ourselves. And if they do, that's fine, because that means we've actually created something really, really big.
Right.
I'll tell a quick story because I think this highlights exactly Jordan's point. This year, ESPN entered the collegiate esports space. They hosted the Collegiate Esports Championship down in Houston, Texas. And we had dialogue with them for 6 or 8 months previously. And they kind of came out and said, hey, we're ESPN. We're going to host this major event, just letting you know. You know, we'd love to have you guys help promote it or amplify our content. But they weren't really looking for us to be involved. And in the collegiate space, for those of you who don't know, there's two major players, TESPA, which is owned by Activision Blizzard, and they do some really great community work. And then CSL, who, you know, I'm very biased of, and we're doing some really great things also. And it came down to the end of the day that when ESPN was looking to activate, they own and operate everything that they do for the most part. And they're the behemoth in the space. But they soon realized after 2, 3, 4, 5 months of trying to put it together that to be in this space and to do meaningful activations, we've got 10 years of history. They tapped us on the shoulder and said, guys, we need your help. Can you help program and run an online league that feeds into our live event? Because if you just put your hand up and said, I'm ESPN, I'm hosting a live event. Well, what's the narrative? What's the story? What's the content? What's the long tail? Who's being involved? How does this become something that's so exciting for people to attend that they actually get out of their house and get on a plane or get in a car and drive to Houston? So ESPN, I'll give them support in the world, because they tapped us on the shoulder, they tapped Tespa on the shoulder. We actually ran five different leagues that we ran online that then culminated in their live event. And as a result of that, last night at the Tempest Awards, hopefully many of you were there, they actually won Amateur Esports Event of the Year. So ESPN got into the space in a really impactful way, and I hope they continue that relationship for many years.
Cool. Let's open it up to questions. Do we have any questions in the audience? Or we can do one more question that I could pose to them. Any questions? No?
Nothing.
Okay. Check. Okay, you know what? I have a question. A lot of brands are turning to their, this will be the last one, to their, oh wait, do we have one? In the back?
I'm curious, you know, about the bundle activation, what was the planning process like for that in terms of, you know, you do this 3-year strategy, right? So how do you turn, you know, hey, let's do like a few events, like, let, you know, let's figure out like a short-term plan to do, hey, let's actually do something material, like a 3-year strategy.
Yeah, it's a lot of projecting, because like we don't know where it's going to be 3 years out. We don't know what it's going to be in 3 months. So what we kind of do is like short term, long term, where we have actual items we're going to do like in the first 3 months, and then everything really after 3 months is like conceptual, where we want it to be. But we're not 100% sure like if it's going to necessarily make sense. So like for example, like. Bringing a guy onto the team is going to be a really big play for us.
You have to A/B test, sort of, right? Like,
sorry?
You have to like A/B test.
Yes. Of. Yeah. You got to kind of see like what fits with it, for sure. We think the college level is really interesting too, like taking this team on tour. Whether that's actually just like meet with them and talk to them, or play with or play against them, is something that's in our roadmap. And then like integration with other types of brands too. Like we don't want this just to be just for them. So that's when we had like in year 1.5 we were thinking, but since we launched this, we actually think that might happen in the next couple months. So like the ability to be flexible in that long-term plan and like move things up and down based on like what's happening. So basically the contract has a lot of things in it that might, may or may not happen depending on what happens.
Thanks.
Cool. Question?
Yeah. So when you're communicating with somebody, a brand that's not in esports,
when you're communicating to a brand that's not in esports currently, particularly like a non-endemic brand, how are you, like, what, I think there's these Nielsen reports and other reports that are like, if you, you know, we've seen this percentage increase in, you know, the way people feel about a brand when they start to you know, do this, these sponsorships. But is that the kind of data, how are you getting them excited about, oh, this is a great idea, like I should do this, as opposed to, you know, not, you know, or just, I don't understand the, you know, what's happening here. Like, we're having trouble crossing that bridge.
I want to just summarize the question. Is your question, how do you get, there's probably about, now in 2019, because there's a big evolution. 2016, there's probably a very small people actively spending money and budget in esports. Now in 2019, it's flipped, and there's the minority not spending money, other ones are actively spending budgets. Are you talking about this 20% per se? How do we get them to even embrace esports?
Yeah, I mean, if you're communicating with a brand that used to television advertising, like, well, we have 12 million people
sure.
are watching this program, and they'll watch your ad, and that's, they understand that, but for
sure.
some reason they don't seem to understand, well, we have this many people, and you know, they don't know what concurrent users are, they're like, people are on for half an hour, it sounds like, and they just, the whole thing escapes them, and I'm having trouble communicating to them, well, this is, you know, the power of this, and why you should be doing this.
Sure, that's a good question. This will be the last question. But I'd love for both of you to answer.
I can be brief, but I think the most important thing is just to sit down with the brand and see what their objectives are for Q4, Q1, Q2. And I don't go in guns a-blazing saying, here's the data, here's the reports, here's the projections, here's, you know, what this can do for your EBITDA. It's sitting down and generally having a discussion with whoever's the marketing manager, whoever's the account director, and just saying, what's your brand objectives? What's your company's objectives? What are you trying to do? What's your interest around esports? And you know, what encouraged you to have this conversation? Because a lot of the times people say, oh, I need to be in esports, and here's why. Okay, well, what's your why? You know, are you trying to move product? Are you trying to become relevant again? Are you trying to, you know, reposition your brand? Are you trying to launch something new? And it's sitting down with guys who have been in the space that kind of understand the professional world and also, or the corporate world and then the esports world, and sitting down and just making a playbook around what makes sense. And I'm not going to be in the, I'm not in the business of doing short-term deals. If I'd rather sit there and say, okay, you know what, your brand's not ready for a Q4 activation, so why don't we do this the right way? Take a step back and actually get something out the door that not only you're going to be proud of, but your manager's going to be proud of, that can roll up to your director. And that's a big win for you and your company. At the end of the day, I'd rather take long-term revenue, and you know, I hope to be in the business for a long, long time. And let's make meaningful long-term partnerships around things that your brand's already trying to do. And to Jordan's point, build on your strengths, build on your successes, and just make esports another vertical within your current marketing and advertising spends.
Cool. Jordan?
I would... If you have, I totally agree. And if you have like an executive that's maybe being a pain and doesn't get it, there's a couple different things that we do. For starters, we bring a lot of our gamers to meetings so they can actually meet and see these people and hear their stories. They're inspirational and incredible. I've had more meetings in esports where people like get really emotional and cry than ever happened in traditional sports. It's
Who's
crazy.
Crying?
Like people,
the potential
they start,
client
they
or the
start,
gamer?
No, both. Like they start
Everyone's
telling their
crying?
Stories. Like okay. It's crazy. Like they start telling their stories of how they grew up and what their relationship was like with gaming.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people say, like you know, my mom or my dad bought me a system and I was playing alone in the basement. Like people kind of like get like really emotional into it. So I think you kind of pull at the heartstrings is a really good way. We also will do things like. We do events with kids, so well, like with our Fortnite team, we'll actually invite C-level executives to our office and to bring their kids. So it's like a family event. So I would just try to find ways if someone is being difficult and doesn't want to get into esports, is holding it back, trying to get them to see through a different lens, and a lot of times like appealing to like when they were kids or working actually through their own kids is something that we've seen a lot of success at. And like even if a brand is not sure, an agency's not sure, people come to us and say, hey, can we host a meeting in your office? Or can we do like some of these activations before we start? We've done it because it helps some executives be like, I didn't really fully get it until like I saw my kids like light up when they were playing Fortnite with some of our players, for example.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, I was just going to say one thing, and adding on Jordan's point is...
Are you going to say one thing or
two things?
Probably one thing.
Okay.
But it's saying our company was really built out of exactly what Jordan was saying, is people find their passion in many different ways. And a lot of people come into the space and they say, oh, I want to be an esports, so I'm going to build an agency, or I'm going to build a company, or I'm going to build a team. Our entire business, and we've been around 10 years, and you know, having almost 10,000 teams, it all started because our founder, this guy Duran, was playing... you know, StarCraft in his dorm room in 2009, and he just wanted to play with other people. So he invited some people for some other schools, and he didn't want to go drinking at the bars. He didn't want to go, you know, play intramural sports. He doesn't like sports that much. He loves video games. That's his passion. And all of a sudden, we found this community of people in the California schools, expanded to the Midwest, expanded to the East Coast. And that's what resonates, because gaming is a part of all of us, and now we're on 1,800 campuses. But if you look around, not only this room, but any room that you're in, at least half or more are gamers. And what I love about FaZe Clan is that they're unapologetically gamers. And even 5 years ago, it was still stigmatized to say I'm a gamer. And those guys kick the damn door down and say I'm unapologetically a gamer, but I'm cool and I party and I drive fast cars. And I just love how far we've got, and it's really only the beginning.
And being a gamer can be casual too, I think. Like I tell people, we can just do Mario Kart. Like we can keep this stuff really simple. Like if you played Duck Hunt as a kid, you're a gamer. And just kind of making people feel comfortable about that term. You don't have to be a hardcore Overwatch or Call of Duty. You can be playing Candy Crush, like you're a gamer.
Right. And both of you, I mean, obviously you could feel the passion from them, and that's what you really need to harness when you're talking to these individuals. If you're going apples to apples with professional sports, professional traditional sports versus esports, it's probably going to be a tough sell. I've been there a lot. You got to play on the passion and the lifestyle that the esports and that gaming and esports thrives on. And trust me, it works. They will buy into it if you do that properly. Okay, that's it. I just wanted to say thank you, Jordan Sherman, Gen G Esports, Neil Duffy, Will Gaming, and Felicia Starling, and I'm Johnny Ward. Thank you, everybody. If you have questions, come on up.
Thank you, Johnny.